My arrest had Che Huang's fingerprints all over it. The MPs who arrested me had no idea what laws I might have broken. They made no effort to charge me. By now they knew that I was a liberator, but they could not arrest me for that. However, having a relatively clean slate would not get me out of the brig in time to help Kleiber. I was vaguely aware of the time and decided that Kleiber must have arrived. He would have his regular security detail around him. Unless given misinformation, Kleiber would notice my absence. Would he look for me? Would he become suspicious and alert his guard? My absence might or might not have been warning enough that Huang might have an ambush in mind. I needed to get to Kleiber. If Huang was behind this... I was cut off and helpless, able only to wait and see what would happen. I sat on the edge of my cot and looked around the cell for a way out. Escape was out of the question. The air vents along the top of the wall were only 3 inches wide. I could not even fit my fist in them. Unless I could figure out a method for passing through steel walls and bulletproof glass, I might be stuck in this cell for a long time. An officer approached the door of my cell and spoke into the intercom.
You're free to go.
Free to go?
I apologize for the misunderstanding, Harris.
The colonel had two guards with him. All three men were armed.
Our fleet headquarters sent us a message telling us to be on the lookout for a Lieutenant Wason Harris, who was falsely reported as killed in action.
That sounds like me.
I followed the colonel and his escort out of my cell and down a hall.
And now I'm free to go.
We reached a table at the end of the hall. My bag sat on the table. One of the guards handed me the bag.
Everything is in there, including your gun. This is all a misunderstanding. My men mistook the bulletin for orders to arrest you. Once we reported the arrest to Fleet Command, Admiral Huang's office contacted us.
That's so.
Nobody told us you were on a high-security mission for Admiral Kleiber. I'm sorry about this. You're here running security for the Joint Chiefs meeting, aren't you? I hope we didn't screw it up.
When did Kleiber's party arrive?
They've been here for several hours.
Then we'll know the extent of the damage pretty soon, won't we?
Admiral Huang called my office. The Admiral himself.
Really? What did old Che have to say?
Admiral Huang says that he missed you. He says he's surprised to hear you're alive and that he can't wait to catch up with you.
Rather than house me in the barracks with his men, the colonel booked me a room in the civilian dormitories, not far from Kleiber and the other attendees. Not even bothering to look around my quarters, I tossed my bag on my bed and started to strip off my blouse. The rest of the room was dark, but the glare from the entryway light was enough for me to see what I was doing. I had my blouse off and was just beginning to step out of my pants.
Who the...
I managed to swivel around just far enough to see the boot before it kicked me across the chin. I had no time to react before the man rushed forward, brought up his boot, and kicked me in the base of the ribs. Behind the kicker, I saw two more men, but I did not have time to see their faces. The next kick struck me across the point of the chin. Using my left foot to push off the bed, I lashed forward with my right, scooping the man's leg off the floor. Pushing up to my knees, I sprung to my bed and grabbed my rucksack with one hand while rolling over the far edge for cover. As I dug through my bag with one hand, I stole a quick glance over the bed. The two men in the entryway pulled pistols. My fingers found the butt of my M27.
What do we do?
By this time, I had moved. The room was completely dark. I had no reason to hide. My shoes were off, and I moved along the edge of the wall toward the entryway. I heard a heaved object hitting the quilted blanket that covered my bed.
Get out of here!
I took his advice. Grabbing my bag off the floor, I sprinted for the entryway. One of the assailants peeked out from behind a corner. I leaped in his direction. The assailant disappeared around the corner, and I managed to get clear of the door. A sheet of water poured out of sprinklers hidden in the ceiling. The assailants got away. I struggled, just climbing to my feet. Had the attackers waited around to see if I had survived their grenade, they could have killed me easily enough.
They'll be back. Next time, I'll be ready for them.
A little while later, a medic strapped some bandages around my torso, handed me a bottle of painkillers, and gave me a clean bill of health. As I buttoned my blouse, Admiral Kleiber came into the room.
Well, I suppose that's an effective way to run a security detail.
How is that, sir?
Get all of the assassins to come after you.
Very clever, sir.
You always were a lightning rod for trouble. When I sent you to Gobi on your first assignment to hide you from some liberators, a Mogat general found you instead.
Hazards of the career. Marines and mercenaries get shot at. It comes with the pay.
And you always survive. Extraordinary. Are they after you or after me?
Without you, there's no reason to go after me.
I suppose not.
But look on the bright side. If this is the best they can do with three gunmen and a grenade, by the time they get to you, they might run out of ammunition.
Thanks. I feel better.
Golan Security arranged for my new room, complete with guards posted outside the door. I was a bodyguard with bodyguards. In short, I was useless. When I finished stowing my gear, I put on my media link and contacted Ray Freeman.
So much for traveling as Arlen Marston.
Yes, Corporal Marston can finally rest in peace. As far as I'm concerned, Huang did me a favor. Now I can come and go freely. I don't have to worry about guards finding out that I'm a liberator every time I pass through security stations anymore. They'll know, and they'll know that I'm legal. Thanks to Huang, I can carry my gun in public. The head of security asked me how many men I need. Hell, he even upgraded my room.
What does Clyber have to say about Huang?
He's got other things on his mind. He's going to tell the Joint Chiefs about his ship tomorrow.
Will you be there when he makes the announcement?
I'm not allowed in. Only top brass gets in that room.
No guards? No wonder Clyber's nervous.
It's all top brass. He's with civilized company.
They stabbed Caesar to death on the floor of the Senate. And Caesar thought he was in civilized company, too. You flying back with Clyber after the summit?
Nope. My job is to get him from his transport to the meeting, and from the meeting to the transport.
Think you will see Huang at the meeting tomorrow?
Yeah. I need to thank him for the swank accommodations.
How did Huang's office know you were headed to Golan? Who told him about you?
I've got a pretty good idea. Half of Kleiber's senior staff officers had arrived the day before. I checked the manifest. Captain Leonid Johansson was among them.
Mm-hmm. Don't jump to any conclusions. Those weren't Huang's men in your room. Could have let you rot in jail if he wanted to hurt you. What do you know about little man?
The battle or the movie?
The planet.
It's a fully habitable planet. Well, not fully habitable. That valley where the Mogat ship crashed is plenty hot.
Hot as in radioactive?
As in highly radioactive. You wouldn't want to go anywhere near there. Every place else should be okay. Why do you want to know about little man?
My family is moving there.
Your family? A wife and kids? What are they doing on Little Man?
Colonizing.
Colonizing?
They're Neo-Baptist.
Which means, why are the Neo-Baptists colonizing Little Man?
The Neo-Baptists want to establish colonies, like the Catholics.
And they got permission to land on Little Man?
Does it matter?
It matters. That planet is in the Scutum Crux arm, one of the hostile arms. If the UA finds them, they'll think it's a Mogat colony. That was why we went to Little Man in the first place, to kill Mogats. The planet is listed as uninhabited, and the last I heard, Congress wanted to keep it that way. Freeman did not like long conversations. This current conversation was epic by his standards. We spoke for another minute or two, then signed off. I lay in bed thinking about what he'd said. Freeman was right. Why would Huang spring me from the brig, then send a trio of goons after me? It made no sense. Bryce Clyber sat at the breakfast table in his dress whites. The climate of this summit must have agreed with him. He looked thoroughly energized as he spread marmalade over a triangle of toast. His posture, erect as always, now looked pert. A slight smile showed on his face as he looked up to greet me.
Lieutenant Harris?
I saluted, and he returned the gesture.
You look surprisingly fit, considering your adventures from last night. Did you sleep well?
Yes, sir. Sir, I was wondering about my status with the Marines. Now that Huang knows I am alive, am I back on active duty?
That is the question. I've wondered about that myself. What would be the safest course with Admiral Huang lurking about? Do you have any suggestions?
No, sir.
I've taken the liberty of reassigning you to the Doctrinaire for now. You are on my roster. I doubt Huang's men will arrest you right under my nose.
Thank you, sir.
I assume you have no desire to go back on active duty?
Join the Marines again? No, sir.
Understood, Lieutenant. And I suppose we should regroup after the summit and discuss your options. You've spent 2 years on the lam, as it were, and I see no reason why you couldn't turn up absent without leave again.
Thank you, sir.
And now, Lieutenant, perhaps we should head out to the conference room.
We made our way to the conference room, and I examined my surroundings. From what I saw, the meeting looked more like a college reunion than a military summit. Officers in dress uniforms spoke cheerfully as they caught up on old times. Behind every swaggering general and admiral stood a couple of lesser officers watching quietly and taking mental notes about everything that was said. Admiral Halvorsen, Captain Johansson, and a handful of Navy men stood off in one corner waiting for Fleet Admiral Kleiber. He was their shark. They were his remoras. When they saw Kleiber, they drifted out to greet him, then silently fell into his entourage. Having delivered Admiral Kleiber to the summit, I started to leave. I had rounds to make. I wanted to check in with the security station and do one last sweep of Kleiber's quarters, but Kleiber summoned me back.
Stay for a moment, Harris.
I saw Admiral Huang headed in our direction.
This may be my moment to do a bit of bodyguarding on your behalf.
Admiral Kleiber. Lieutenant Harris, I heard you were here.
I saluted. The Admiral did not bother returning the salute.
The Lieutenant is here with me.
Yes. So, he's on the crew of your mysterious ship.
With this, he left us.
How much does he know about my ship, I wonder?
He should not know that you have a ship at all.
Yes. I really must have a word with Captain Johansson before we return to the Doctrinaire.
A few minutes later, the conference got underway, and the party started to funnel through a nearby doorway.
This should be an all-day affair.
Yes, sir.
Do you have plans for the day? I hope you're not going to waste the entire time checking and rechecking these same hallways.
That's the plan, sir.
Have you read the book I gave you?
The story about Shannon?
Did you learn anything?
Not to expect hospitality in the Catholic colonies.
Yeah, that's one lesson. See you after the summit.
Kleiber joined up with Admiral Brocious, and they entered the conference room. The summit lasted 10 hours. I met Kleiber at the door when it adjourned. More than anything else, he seemed tired as he emerged from the meeting.
We're in for a tougher fight than any of them know. Stupid bastards are too young to remember the last war. Kellen wasn't even born yet.
General John Kellen, the new Secretary of the Army, made big news a few years back by attaining the rank of general before his 35th birthday. His father and two uncles, all three of them senators, threw a party to commemorate the achievement on the floor of the Senate. When it came to mixing politics and service, Kellen was a mere piker compared to the illustrious fleet admiral. Nobody respected Kellen's combat-free war record. I led Kleiber back to his room.
Did you tell the Joint Chiefs about the Doctrinaire?
Yes. You should have seen Wong. Admiral Wong said that he knew all about it. He sounded so familiar with his ship, you would think I'd invited him aboard for tea. The arrogant bastard stared me right in the eye, and all but admitted that he had spies on board. Didn't flinch, didn't even bat an eye.
Johansson?
Undoubtedly. I have a score to settle with our Captain Johansson.
What do we do about Huang?
That's the million-dollar question. I don't have to do anything about Wong. A man will destroy himself. There's no place in the unified authority for an officer with his lack of judgment. I seriously doubt he and his career will survive the war. Perhaps we should leave.
Kleiber and I reached the staging area where VIP passengers boarded their ships.
One's got nerve, I'll give him that much. The other Joint Chiefs don't know what they're up against with him. They're simple soldiers. He's a Machiavellian. You get a Machiavelli in the ranks when you've been at peace for too long. Without war, officers advance by politics instead of merit.
Ahead of us, the landing pad stretched out for miles. It was so immense that its floor and ceiling seemed to form their own peculiar horizon. Kleiber's transport sat on the tarmac just 100 feet ahead of us. One of Kleiber's pilots milled at the foot of the ramp, smoking a cigarette.
You're not interested in a life as a Marine, I understand. When you get to the Doctrinaire, I'll make arrangements for an honorable discharge. What you do beyond that is up to you.
Thank you, sir. What about you?
The Doctrinaire is going to end this war, Harris. Then we can rebuild the Republic. Once we shake the deadwood out, there'll be a need for a building. I suppose there'll be time for me to enter politics.
We had reached the door of the transport. I snapped to attention and saluted Kleiber. He returned my salute. I wanted to talk more, but I was not boarding the ship.
Admiral?
Good day, Lieutenant Harris.
Kleiber turned and walked up the ramp into his transport. A sense of relief washed through me as I saw an attendant seal the transport hatch. Unlike my little Johnston, Kleiber's 80-foot-long C-64 Mercury-class transport ship was not designed to fly in an atmosphere with oxygen or gravity. The big ship rolled to the first door of the locks under its own power. An electroshield door sealed behind the C-64. I could still see the craft through that first door, but it now had an unsteady appearance, as if I was watching it through heat waves. The ship lumbered on through two more electroshield doors, entering the low-gravity area. The tower gave Kleiber's ship immediate clearance, and it levitated from the deck on a cloud of steaming air. The ship hung above the deck for a few seconds as it rotated to face the aperture. I watched the ship and thought about receiving an honorable release from the Marines. I had to smile. As I turned to leave, I saw something that did not make sense. At first, I did not even realize what I was seeing. Five or six civilians stood on the far side of the security gate, watching ships take off. Aware that something felt wrong, I headed toward them for a better look. Then I realized what I saw. I knew one of the men, only he was not a civilian. Rear Admiral Tom Halverson, dressed in a suit and tie like an ordinary businessman, stood at the front of the group.
Miss your ride?
Halverson turned to look at me. He paused, stared at me for just a moment, then turned and bolted into the service halls behind the security station.
Grab that man! Stop him!
I pulled my M27. All five guards pulled their guns. Two ran off after Halverson, but the other three kept their M27s trained on me. As the MPs closed in around me, I looked back at the launch area, expecting to see Kleiber's ship explode. The C-64 had dragged itself to the airspace just in front of the aperture, and the transport seemed to dangle precariously as it approached that opening. But instead of exploding, it rose steadily higher.
What is going on, Harris?
I turned to see the colonel who had sprung me from the brig pushing his way towards me. He looked angry.
Colonel, there's a bomb on Kleiber's ship!
Out of the way!
The colonel pulled a discreet communications stem from his collar.
Traffic control, hold Kleiber's ship. I repeat, this is urgent. Hold Kleiber's transport. Yeah, that's right. Yes, I've got a man out here who says that there is a bomb on board the Admiral's ship. Shit, no, don't bring it down. If we have a bomber around here, he might set it off. Yes, yes. Look, we're on our way over. Just have the pilot hang tight.
And that was what happened. Kleiber's massive transport continued to hover in front of the aperture like a bee waiting to enter a flower. I paused to look at it for just a moment.
Move it, Harris.
We headed into the control tower, a tinted glass tower that reached to the ceiling of the landing area.
You'd better be right about this, Harris.
Yes, sir.
What did you see?
Rear Admiral Halverson. He didn't get on the flight.
You set off alarms because you saw some guy standing around?
Rear Admiral Halverson is Kleiber's second in command.
So he missed the specking flight? Oh, I'm specked. I had to trust a goddamn clone.
Halverson ran when he saw me. He was—
You're a damn liberator! Damn specking right he ran when he saw you. You're a goddamn liberator clone. You're a freaking disaster waiting to happen. Anyone in his right mind is going to run when he sees you. I should have run when I saw you. No, I should have had my men shoot you when they had the chance. Oh, I am specked.
Around the room, men sat beside radar consoles in clusters of three.
How should we handle this?
The colonel and I went over to join the radar controller.
Traffic control, this is UA Transport 5 Tango Zulu. Do you read me?
We read you, 5 Tango Zulu.
What seems to be the hang-up down there?
You want me to bring them back?
Not based on the evidence Lieutenant Harris just gave me.
Is there a problem, traffic control?
Through the black tinted windows, I could see Kleiber's transport hanging just below the lip of the aperture.
Colonel, we have to do something. My cue is cataclysmically specked.
Can you laser scan the transport in midair?
Sure. 5 Tango Zulu, this is traffic control. Prepare for a scan, do you copy?
Don't you save scans for incoming?
A silver-red beam locked onto the hull of the C-64. It moved up and down the Mercury-class transport.
Find anything?
It's clean, sir.
The colonel glared at me.
You see any unidentified ships in the area?
The controller ran his finger over the radar screen, tracing a line above the information the scan found.
All clear. Look for yourself.
What am I looking at?
Control, should I land this bird?
What do you think, sir?
What do the markings mean?
These red triangles are Air Force. They're guarding our airspace. These blue boxes are civilian ships. The green ones are government. Strictly non-combat. Surveyors, that kind of shit.
Send them on their way.
Sure, no problem. 5 Tango Zulu, this is traffic control. Sorry about the tie-up. We had a false alarm.
Are we cleared to leave?
You are clear for takeoff. Kleiber's transport is self-broadcasting. You don't see self-broadcasters often. And now comes the cool part.
The controller pointed at a blue square with symbols that meant absolutely nothing to me.
You see that? That's 5 Tango Zulu. That's the Admiral's transport. He'll fly a few minutes out, and then poof. The ship vanishes off the screen so quickly that the computers don't know what to do about it. The screen goes blank because the system resets. If you ever wanted to see a computer wet itself, watch this. It's the weirdest damn thing you ever saw.
The colonel stood in front of the window. Now that he had cleared the transport to leave, he wanted to make sure he had made the right call. Once the big transport departed safely, he would deal with me. I walked over to the window in time to see the tail of Cliver's C-64 escaping into the black void beyond the aperture.
Huang or no Huang, Harris, you're up Shit Creek this time. You know that, don't you?
I did not answer.
We'll just wait until your friend Cliver's transport is away, then you and I can settle up.
Watching Cliver's ship grow smaller and smaller as it drifted into space, I realized just how far up that creek I had traveled.
That's it. They're gone. Now let's you and me go over to the brig and have a little discussion. How does that sound?
The colonel started toward the elevator, and I turned to follow.
Wait, you're gonna miss the show.
The colonel paused to see what he was talking about. The controller pointed into the radar screen to show us Cliver's ship.
See? He's already 10 miles out. He's gonna want to get at least 1,000 miles away before he broadcasts. That will put him here.
The controller pointed to a ring about 4 inches away from the circle that represented the dry docks.
Oh, now you see these? These are the local broadcast discs. The transport has to be at least 1,000 miles away from them. Self-broadcasting too close to the network, it really mucks with the discs, see? So the transport has to go in the other direction.
The colonel watched out of courtesy. He placed his arms across his chest, folding his hands over his biceps, and stood stiff as a pillar.
Any second now?
A few seconds passed, but nothing happened.
What the hell? UA Transport 5 Tango Zulu, come in 5 Tango Zulu, come in. Come in 5 Tango Zulu!
Well, what's going on?
Mark, get to your station, give me a reading.
One of the controllers sprinted across the floor.
What's going on?
I can't reach the transport. Emergency station, we have a possible stiff.
I read you, Control.
I'll make that a definite stiff. Look on your radar for 5 Tango Zulu. It's a few miles off deck in sector A-12.
A-12?
Hold on. I'll try raising visual contact with the pilot.
A little screen the size of a playing card winked to life on the console next to the radar readout. Centered in that screen was Cliver's pilot. He sat strapped in his chair, his head hanging slack. At first I thought he was reading something. Then I noticed the telltale details. White skin with a slight blue tint, the blood blister color of the lips, the frozen eyes, and realized that only his harness held him strapped in his seat.
He's dead.
Shit, 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 shit. Oh my god. Emergency station. Mary Mother of God, it's a ghost ship. Repeat, emergency station 5 Tango Zulu is a ghost ship. The pilot is dead. Holy shit, Mary Mother of God. Repeat, the pilot is dead.
A network of emergency lights flashed red, then green, then white, then yellow around the launch pad. I walked over to the window and watched 12 floors below as emergency teams moved into position around the enormous hangar.
They'll do what they can. We get a lot of crashes when we test prototypes. These guys know how to scramble.
The Triple E's are ready.
Triple E's?
Emergency Evaluation Engineers. They'll inspect the ship and border if possible. Their control room is 2 floors up. We can watch what they do from there.
I followed the colonel into the elevator. A moment later, we entered a universe that bore no resemblance to the traffic control floors below. The sterile glare of fluorescent lights lit an endless expanse of cubicles.
Hey, Clarence, this isn't a good time. We have a ghost ship.
A short, chubby man in a messy white shirt and dark blue pants came toward us.
That's why we're here. Harris is familiar with that ship. He's Cliver's head of security. Maybe he can help. Just don't get in the way.
We followed the colonel's friend into a control room lined with video monitors. A bank of 4 monitors along the wall displayed the scene in full color. The first screen showed only Cliver's ship, which hung in mid-space, silent and motionless. I saw light through the portholes, but no movement. Strobe lights along the tail and the wings of the ship flashed white, then red. The next screen showed a 5-man security ship approaching the derelict transport from the rear. The security ship was tiny compared to the C-64. It looked like a minnow approaching a whale. The third screen was a close-up of Cliver's ship, illuminated by the bleaching eye of that searchlight.
Are you bringing the ship in?
Hell no. We don't know what killed him. That ship could be leaking radiation. That's all I need, a dirty bomb in the middle of my landing field. They could have been killed with some kind of germ agent.
You scanned it.
We must have missed something.
McAvoy!
Somebody stuck his head out of an office. The colonel walked over to that office for a chat.
Scanning the target.
The man who led the boarding team pressed a button, changing the view of one of the screens on the wall.
Keep sharp, boys. They ran a scan on this bird before it left the docks, and it came up empty.
Roger. Scanning for bombs.
The laser beam moved ever so slowly as it scanned the ship. I watched, nearly needing to bite my tongue to stop myself from screaming. There was no bomb on that ship. If there had been a bomb, the ship would have blown up. The colonel returned.
Harris, you sure you saw Halverson?
Yes.
Rear Admiral Thomas Halverson?
Yes.
That can't be. He's registered as a passenger on Kleiber's ship.
You have the passenger manifest?
Yes.
Can I see it? We might get some answers by comparing the list of passengers with the people we find on the ship.
I'll get a printout. And I'll put out an all-points bulletin for Halverson. If he's still in the dry dock facility, we'll find him.
Can you run another DNA search in the apartment they blew up last night? Maybe you missed something. If you find anything, compare it to Halverson's file.
You think that was Halverson?
Or some of his friends.
The room is pretty well scorched, but we'll give it a try.
Okay. Explosives came up clean. Let's run for chemicals and anomalies.
This scan moved more quickly, but not by much.
Can you bring it in now?
No.
Admiral Kleiber could still be alive.
We don't know what happened on that ship. We can't risk it.
Ready to board the ship.
Let's have a look.
The first three screens now showed nothing but static shots of the outside of Admiral Kleiber's transport. All the action took place on the fourth screen, which was mostly dark. This screen showed a helmet camera view of the action. It showed the accordion walls and temporary gangway that connected the Triple E ship to the transport. The only light on the screen came from the torches in the evaluation crew's helmets. One of the engineers pressed a three-pronged key into a slot on the side of the C-64's hull.
Okay, we're moving in.
The cabin within was brightly lit. I recognized the ivory-colored carpeting in the quick glance that I got. On the screen, the eye of a single torch beam lit the door to the cockpit as a hand came out of nowhere and tried the handle. The pilot and co-pilot sat upright in their seats, their heads hanging chin to chest as if they were asleep. Lights winked on and off in the dimly lit space. The pilot's coloring was off, the blue tones in his skin more pronounced than before. I might have mistaken it for bad lighting had his brownish-black hair not looked the right hue.
Any idea what killed him?
I can guess. It seems pretty obvious. Want me to take a tissue sample or wait for the medics to arrive?
Take it.
On the screen, the camera drew closer to the pilot. A gloved hand reached under the pilot's chin and drew his head up. Blank, glassy eyes and blue lips faced the camera.
Any vital signs on your end?
He's dead. Jab him.
The gloved hand released the pilot, and his head flopped back toward the floor, bobbing with the whiplash of the neck. The gloved hand on the screen dug through a small pouch and produced a plastic packet. The hand tore the packet open and pulled out a 3-inch-long needle with a little hilt on one end.
God, I hate this shit.
On the screen, the tech pressed the needle into the fleshy area just under the pilot's jaw.
You getting a reading?
Yeah, cardiac arrest.
You want me to do the co-pilot too?
What's the point?
Cardiac arrest?
Means they got electrocuted.
Live and learn.
Found bodies.
More screens lit. On one of the new screens, a tech sorted his way through the passengers in the main cabin. The tech shuffled from one passenger to the next, lifting heads and occasionally using a handheld device to check for pulses and other vital signs. Whatever had killed these men did not so much as jostle the ship. Nothing had fallen out of place, and the three men sitting at the bar had not fallen off their stools.
Dead? This one's dead too. Dead? Dead!
The tech reached a body in a corner of the cabin. This man's arm hung in the air like a school kid looking to ask his teacher a question.
This one got flamed.
The man's hair and uniform had apparently caught on fire. The flames had singed his skin, burning it up like a log in a fire. The face, with its lips parted to reveal a skeletal smile, was unidentifiable. Back on the first screen, the engineer in the cockpit took readings using the C-64 sensors. He took an air reading.
High ozone, high carbon dioxide. You reading this?
I see it.
Am I cleared to retrieve the ship?
Unless one of the passengers objects.
What did he find?
Ozone. That means the broadcast engine malfunctioned.
How do you know it was the broadcast engine?
Ozone is what you get when you fire up a broadcast engine.
How do you know it malfunctioned?
They're dead, ain't they?
The colonel and I went to the edge of the docks, and there we waited for 10 long minutes while the tower guided Admiral Kleiber's C-64 transport in through the aperture. Through the wavy lens of the electro shields, I saw the big Mercury-class transport sidle into the aperture. It entered the landing bay nose first, then hung in the air for several seconds, its bloated fuselage swaying slightly like a chandelier in a breeze.
What is a ghost ship?
Dead crew.
And the passengers?
I don't know. Once the crew is dead, there's not much hope for the passengers.
Landing gear extended from the bottom of Kleiber's ghost ship as it dropped down to the deck on the other side of the lock. I watched it closely as I pulled on the blue soft-shell jacket of a civilian security man.
What the spec do you think you're doing?
I turned around to see the head of Golan Dry Dock's emergency services, a chubby man with a thick neck and a spiky buzz cut.
Lay off, Smith. He's with me.
That's just what I need, a damn liberator running around loose in my operation.
Struggling to keep control of his temper, the colonel zipped the front of his soft-shell coat closed.
Harris is Kleiber's head of security. He has the right to be here.
He doesn't have shit in my landing bay.
I'll take responsibility for him.
Then it's your ass!
While they had this conversation, the transport rolled through the first gate of the docks. Once that sealed behind it, the second electroshield opened, and the C-64 pulled within a few feet of the emergency teams. Five medics boarded the transport first. The colonel and I came in on their heels. They stopped to inspect the bodies in the main cabin, an area that looked more like the executive suite of a luxury hotel than the interior of a military transport. Even in my emergency armor, I could smell the acrid scent of ozone, the smell of overheated batteries and charged copper wires as I entered the cabin. This smell was soon drowned out by a stronger scent, the dusty smell of burned meat. I hurried across the thick ivory-colored carpeting and past the living room fixtures and entered a hall that led to the rear of the craft. I traveled with Bryce Kleiber in the past. He always reserved a private cabin for himself in the rear of the ship. I knew where I would find him. Two Marines, clones, had stood guard by his door. Both men had collapsed in place, their M27s still strapped across their shoulders. The color of their faces had turned a deep violet, and their black tongues hung from their mouths. The door to Kleiber's cabin was locked. I touched the surface of the door, then looked at my glove. A fine layer of dust covered the tip of my finger.
Ash.
A medical tech and a partner squeezed past the colonel and entered the narrow hallway. They carried a stretcher.
It's everywhere in here. The carpets, the walls, the bodies.
I turned and entered Admiral Kleiber's cabin. I spotted the admiral immediately. Bryce Kleiber sat flaccid at his desk, still wearing his whites, the gold epaulets gleaming across his hunched shoulders. The admiral's head lay on the desk, his left cheek resting on the keyboard of his computer, his blue-black lips spread slightly apart and his swollen black tongue lolling out. Kleiber's bright blue eyes stared at the wall across the room. Standing in the doorway, the colonel watched me as I checked Kleiber for a pulse. I don't know why I bothered. I suppose I did not know what else to do.
You're not going to leave him like that.
What do you suggest I do with him?
Set him up.
I don't think he's worried about appearances. Let the dead bury the dead.
I left the room. I was a liberator. I was Kleiber's brew. We had not been built to mourn the dead. We were programmed to avenge them.
What do we have here?
The voice came from the engine compartment as I walked down the hall. The cabin that housed the broadcast equipment was nearly twice the size of Kleiber's small cabin. I peered in the door and saw two demolition men in black armor kneeling side by side in front of the broadcast engine. The broadcast engine looked like a giant replica of a box of rifle shells. The engine casing was a rectangular black box with chrome stripes. Inside the case stood 18 brass cylinders that looked like 3-foot-tall replicas of long-point bullets. A network of wires and tubes connected these cylinders.
Was it sabotage?
So much for mystery.
One of the men held up a foot-long length of perfectly clean copper cable.
I could have told him what happened the moment the ship went dark.
I felt a hand grasp my shoulder.
You okay there, Harris?
That cable?
Oh, hello, Colonel McAvoy.
Boys, you were about to explain something to the lieutenant?
This is what happens when a broadcast goes wrong. And there are too many things that can go wrong. No one in their right mind ever travels in a self-broadcasting ship.
And that, Lieutenant Harris, is how you allowed the deaths of everyone on this transport.
I turned to see the Chief of Emergency Services glaring at me.
Easy, Fred.
If you came here to protect the Admiral, you did a shitty job. This ship was sabotaged right under your speck of nose, bud. Do you know how these people died?
I heard something about cardiac arrest.
Cardiac malfunction caused by electrocution would be more accurate. Somebody strung a cable from inside the broadcast engine to the frame of the ship. When the pilot turned on the broadcast engine, he sent 4 million volts through the entire ship for 1/100th of a second.
1/100th of a second?
Do you understand how broadcasting works? The engine generates...
Yes, I know how broadcasting works.
Yeah, well, apparently other people know how it works too, because somebody snuck on this ship under your nose and planted this cable. The Admiral died on your watch, asshole.
I did not return to the Doctrinaire. I boarded the Johnston Starliner that Kleiber loaned me for my trip to the Golan Dry Docks, and I charted a course into space. I flew straight out into deep space, away from the dry docks and the broadcast network, for 4 hours. This far out, the blackness seemed to fold in on itself like a blanket closing around me. Before initiating the broadcast engine, I climbed out of the cockpit and squeezed down the aisle through the cabin. Behind that bulkhead sat the broadcast engine. I had pulled the power cables from the broadcast engine before approaching Golan. Without juice running through it, the broadcast engine was nothing more than a mess of brass, silicon, copper, and cables, undetectable with remote surveillance equipment. Now, before reconnecting those cables, I thought about what happened to Kleiber's transport and gave the broadcast equipment a quick diagnostic. I shimmied around to the back of the engine and checked for cables. Everything looked fine.
Here goes nothing.
I stretched the power cables to the proper terminals on the broadcast engine and snapped them into place. I closed the hood over the engine and returned to my seat in the cockpit. Sitting in a self-broadcasting ship, I realized that I had many options. I could fly anywhere. Kleiber had only loaned me the Starliner, but now that he was gone, I considered the touring ship mine. With Kleiber out of the picture, where could I return it? I could not bring myself to join the other side. I might have been able to bend my programming enough to ditch the Unified Authority Marines, but I could not even consider joining the Mogats or the Confederates. And the truth was, I liked the Mogats and the Confederate arms even less than the Republic. The one thing I knew I wanted was revenge. Father or creator, friend or manipulator, Kleiber died on my watch. He trusted me, and I failed. My job had been to get him off the ship, through the conference, and back on his C-64 transport alive. By the letter of my contract, I succeeded. But that did not make me feel any better. And the truth was, even after all of my tough talk, when I shut my eyes and thought about the people I cared about, Fleet Admiral Bryce Kleiber was the first person to come to mind. Letting my mind wander, I donned my media link shades to check my mail. I had a private message from somebody named Clarence McAvoy. The name meant nothing to me until I noticed the sender's address, Golan Dry Dock Security. Until that moment, I had never stopped to think of him as anything more than the Colonel, just a cog in the dry dock security works.
Harris, we have identified all of the passengers on Kleiber's transport. According to the manifest, there were 21 people aboard that flight. We found 19 bodies. As you said, Rear Admiral Thomas Halverson was not aboard the transport. Neither was Captain Leonid Johansson. We found Johansson's name on a passenger manifest for a transport headed to Washington, D.C. He returned to the Pentagon with Admiral Huang. Huang transferred Johansson to his personal staff early this morning. Isn't that just about the most goddamn lucky transfer you ever heard of? Colonel C. McAvoy. P.S. The attached is the security record of the only people who entered Kleiber's ship. It was a maintenance team. We have not been able to locate all of the techs on that team.
With a couple of quick optical commands, I queued the file McAvoy sent and watched the video record. A team of five technicians passed through the security gates outside the hangar. Each presented identification cards at the desk. Each man passed through a set of security posts, submitting himself to DNA profiling. One of the men was short, no more than 5 feet tall, and mostly bald with a ring of sandy blonde hair. The man wore the jumper of a janitor. The suit looked loose around his compact, wiry physique. His exposed forearms had incredible muscle tone. And there was something else, not that I needed it to identify this man. The edge of a colorful forearm brantou poked out of his sleeve. I recognized this brantou. It was the emblem of the Navy SEALs. But this man wasn't just a Navy SEAL. This was an Adam Boyd clone. These were special clones from a highly classified operation under the personal direction of Admiral Che Huang. No need to worry about anybody recognizing this guy. For the most part, the only people who saw Boyd clones in action were Marines who had very little time to live. Ravenwood, the outpost where I had supposedly died, was a training ground for Adam Boyd clones. Huang assigned platoons of 42 Marines to defend the outpost on Ravenwood, then sent 10-man assault teams of Adam Boyd SEALs to kill them. I was the only Marine who ever escaped. In the video feed, the Adam Boyd clone stepped through the posts without a moment's hesitation. A guard put up a hand to stop him, and the midget smirked up at him with a look of pure disdain. Using an optic command, I stopped the video feed and brought up the clone's identification badge.
Name, Adam Boyd. Title, Maintenance, 6th Detail. Security clearance, all levels. Years with company, 5.
The guard said something that was not picked up by the security camera. The Adam Boyd clone answered satisfactorily, and he was allowed to pass. The maintenance team cleared the security station, then entered and cleaned each of the ships parked on the high security deck, including Admiral Kleiber's C-64. I watched this scene with a mixture of prurient interest and utter awe. The maintenance team stepped into transports belonging to each member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Had he wanted to, that little Boyd bastard could have blown up the entire hierarchy of the UA military. Once the Boyd clone left Kleiber's C-64, I rewound the file and watched him enter the transport a second time. Then I rewound and watched it again in slow motion. I looked for any sign of the copper cable. I timed how long it took him to enter and leave. I noticed that the Boyd entered Kleiber's transport 3 minutes before any of the other workers. He was on the ship for 18 minutes and 32 seconds. He carried a small box of tools as he boarded the ship and brought the same box out. He could have easily smuggled a short length of cable in that box. After watching that clone enter and leave the transport two more times, I finally allowed the video feed to play to its end. What I saw at the end hurt the most. The security camera followed the maintenance team as it left the transport and then the landing area. They walked through the security gate. There, standing just inside the gate on almost the exact same spot where I would see him later that evening, stood Tom Halverson dressed like a civilian. His eyes locked on the little clone. Once the maintenance men walked by, Halverson fell in behind them, remaining a few steps back as they walked down the hall and disappeared from the screen.
Why aren't you at the summit meeting?
Then it occurred to me. Why should he stay at the meeting? He was Huang's man. His job was to oversee the sabotage of Kleiber's ship. Expecting simply to leave a message, I used my shades to place a call to the colonel's office.
Pierce?
Colonel, I got your message. Thank you for sending the video feed.
Did you find anything?
Did you watch the feed all the way through?
Sure. I thought you might find the last few moments especially enlightening. We've searched the dry docks. Halverson isn't here. My guess is that he had another identity programmed into our computers and left using a false ID. I don't suppose you approve of officers using false identification codes, Commander Brocious.
Is there any chance that Halverson flew back to Earth with Huang?
He did not. Huang left before Kleiber. I have a feed of the passengers boarding. Do you want it?
No, but I would like to see any video you might have from the summit.
Good joke.
I'm not joking.
Yes, you are. You seem like a bright guy. You cannot possibly think I would have a feed from a high-level summit. And even if I did, you cannot possibly think I would throw away my career by giving it to you.
The highest-ranking officer in the UA Navy just died on your watch.
Military intelligence is going to be all over this, Harris. They'll get it sorted out.
Yes, they will. And they are going to blame it on you.
How's that?
Follow the trail far enough and you'll see that Admiral Huang was behind this. When it comes to somebody taking a fall, who do you think they're going to go after? You or the Secretary of the Navy?
You think Huang killed Admiral Kleiber?
I can prove it. Do you have a video feed from the summit?
Maybe.
Good. Kleiber and Huang will have gotten into a hot debate. Check out their brawl. Then watch the feed of the maintenance team. And check out the short, bald guy.
I should have had you shot while I had the chance. Suppose I just say you planted the cable.
Your own video record proves that I never went near Kleiber's ship. Are you planning to doctor your records?
Get specked.
Look, Colonel, if you have access to the summit records, and we both know that you do, I suggest you view them. Once you've done that, send it to me, and I will try to help.
And you think I'd trust you?
If you don't want my help, that's fine. The best of luck to you. You're going to need it.
If you're right, and there's something there, I'll get you that feed. If you're lying to me, Harris, I'll have you hauled back to my station for an immediate court-martial. How do you like that deal, Liberator?
With this, he ended the transmission. I did not like that deal. I sat in the cockpit of the Starliner, stared out into space, and stewed. As the Fleet Admiral's security officer, I felt duty-bound to find Kleiber's killer. As a liberator, I felt an almost pathological need for revenge. Beyond that, the evidence suggested that Admiral Huang murdered Kleiber, and just thinking about putting a bullet between his eyes made me feel happy. McAvoy contacted me within an hour. He did not call or write a message. Instead, he sent a virtual delivery, a massive encrypted file, and the key with which to open it. A while later, I contacted Freeman.
Kleiber's death is all over the link. The Navy says it was a tragic accident.
If you call sabotage an accident. Otherwise, it was a tragic murder.
I was still out in space, still a few million miles from the Golan dry docks. I had spent the last 4 hours viewing the summit and had more to go.
You think it was murder?
Yes, and Huang was behind it.
Can you prove it?
No.
What do you have?
I have a security tape showing the maintenance team that cleaned Kleiber's transport. There was an Adam Boyd with them.
That's it?
Huang created those little speckers.
Was Thurston at the summit?
Yes.
The only Boyd clones I've ever seen were assigned to one of Thurston's ships. Maybe he did it. And you can't prove Huang has anything against Kleiber.
Get specked.
The only thing you have is a picture of an Adam Boyd clone boarding Kleiber's ship. Is that right? You can't even prove he did anything to sabotage it.
He was carrying a toolbox, and he was on the ship for 18 minutes and 32 seconds.
Was he alone?
Some of the time. He got on first.
So, you're saying that he had an opportunity to open the broadcast engine and place the cable, even though the rest of the maintenance crew was coming?
Must have. How do you know about the cable?
That's how you sabotage self-broadcasting ships. Do you have anything else?
I've got a security feed from the summit. You should have seen the sparks. Kleiber and Huang really hated each other.
The way I see it, we can either drop this or go after the Boyd. And that's the best we can do until we can tie Huang to the clone.
I knew the Adam Boyd clones were trained on Earth, on an island called Oahu. I stumbled into one of them while on R&R on that island. I knew that their base of operations was now the UA Kamehameha, a fighter carrier in the Scutum Crux arm. Of the two places, Hawaii sounded more hospitable.
Guess I'm headed back to Earth to have a look at their farm. You coming?
The only time I've ever seen Boyd clones was after you got through with them. It'll be interesting to see one that's still breathing.
General Alexander Smith, Secretary of the Air Force and ranking member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, stands in front of an electronic display board holding a laser pointer. The summit takes place around a U-shaped table that is 50 feet long. Only generals and admirals sit at this table. Staff members sit behind them in chairs set against the wall. General Smith's 2D display shows a diagram of the galaxy. Large red circles appear in several areas of the diagram. The general turns and points at them.
As you know, we have engaged enemy troops in the following locations. The Mogats seem to have set up power bases here.
He points at the lower flank of the outer Cygnus arm.
Here.
He circles a parallel segment on the Perseus arm.
And throughout these portions of the Scutum Crux.
Smaller red splotches appear throughout the map.
The Mogats have free access throughout the galaxy. These are hotspots for spying and illegal activity. The only red zones in the Orion arm are the planets New Columbia and Olympus Cree.
Three of the galactic arms turned bright green.
The Cygnus, Perseus, and Scutum Crux arms have declared independence and formed the Organization of Confederate Arms. The Norma arm has also declared independence. From what we can tell, this arm has ejected all Mogat colonists and is not a member of the OCS. Only the Orion and Sagittarius arms have remained loyal. And in all candor, the UA government is funding an all-out covert war in Sagittarius that is costing us trillions of dollars. That's the bad news. The pink areas represent the territories in which our enemies currently enjoy military superiority.
There are no pink areas.
About 3 weeks ago, Air Force Intelligence intercepted the message, "Alterations complete. We'll test in NGC 3612. Obviously, we had no way of knowing what that message meant then.
NGC? Norma Galactic Center?
Correct, Admiral Kleiber. NGC did indeed refer to the inner curve of the Norma Arm, an unpopulated sector of the galaxy. Now, you care to venture a guess as to their usage of alterations or 3612?
It sounds like a date.
You missed your calling, Bryce. You should have been in intelligence. You would have really risen up the ranks. We do not have any outposts in the central part of the Norma arm. It's just too remote. We do, however, have an experimental radar station. This is what the radar readout looked like 9 days ago, March 6th, 2512.
The screen turns flat black with concentric rings marking distances from the radar station. When the radar wand finishes its third sweep, a litter of dots appear in one small section of the screen. The wand sweeps by, refreshing the radar reading every 30 seconds, and the dots do not move. They stay in place for 16 complete sweeps of the wand, a total of 8 minutes. 8 minutes pass, and the next pass of the wand reveals that the dots are gone. They vanish without a trace. The wand sweeps on, but the radar reading remains clear.
Do we have a more detailed reading, sir? I'd like to see an analysis of that.
Admiral Brocious, this radar reading was taken over a 4 million mile distance. I'm afraid the ship designs and serial numbers were out of focus. Best we could do was dot.
The patch with the dots reappears, then grows until it fills the entire screen.
There are precisely 576 dots on this picture.
There were 580 ships in the Galactic Central fleet.
Admiral Thurston shot down four of the Galactic Central destroyers during the battle at Little Man.
Sitting behind Huang, Leonid Johansson nods complacently as if he had some ownership in that victory. Once I notice Johansson, I turn my attention to the wall behind Kleiber. Halvorsen is sitting behind Kleiber, taking careful notes. Beside him sits an officer I do not know. Could be the ill-fated Major Burns, for all I know. Each officer attending the summit has three aides. The last seat behind Kleiber must have been Captain Johansson's. It now sits empty.
That would mean that every last ship was up and running.
Why not? They've had more than 40 years to tune them up.
Admiral Huang makes a good point.
The board behind General Smith clears itself and turns into a map of the Scutum Crux Arm.
There have been 18 sightings of those ships in the last 3 days. They appeared here, here, and here.
That's only a few million miles from the Scutum Crux fleet. Perhaps they plan to engage Admiral Thurston.
Yeah, too bad your boy missed them.
Don?
General Smith turns towards his fellow Air Force man.
We have a radar record of 300 ships appearing within 600,000 miles of your base. They come in, reprogram their broadcasting computers, and flash out. One theory is that they're testing our level of preparedness.
You cannot possibly expect us to patrol every inch of space.
We've got a bigger problem than that. Whatever fleet this is, it has an uncanny awareness of our movements.
Earth date, March 16th, 2512 AD. City, Honolulu. Planet, Earth. Galactic position, Orion Arm. Having a self-broadcasting ship allowed me to bypass the broadcast network and Mars security. I broadcasted myself to the dark side of the solar system, the spot exactly opposite Mars in its orbit. That left me with nearly 100 million miles to fly to reach Earth. 20 hours of travel at the Starliner's top non-atmospheric speed of 5 million miles per hour. Even more hours of flying awaited me once I entered Earth's atmosphere. The Starliner had a top speed of 3,000 miles per hour in atmospheric conditions. The Mach 3 speed limit was a convention imposed throughout the Unified Authority.
Harris, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hearing Freeman's voice brought me back to the real world.
Are you in Hawaii yet?
Not yet.
When you went to Little Man, were you hunting Mogats?
That's what they told us. It's about your family.
What do you think the Navy will do if they find Neo-Baptists there?
It's a valuable planet. There aren't many planets capable of sustaining life without engineering. At the very least, they will consider them squatters. How many people are there?
About 100.
Yeah, that's tiny. The Navy may not even notice them.
They notice them. My father contacted me. He said they're sending a carrier to review the situation.
Know which one?
The Grant, I think. Does it matter?
It might be if it's the Grant. Remember Vince Lee?
Vince was my best friend when I was a Marine. I had not talked with him since going AWOL.
He's an officer on the Grant.
Lee?
You tried to kill him once? You paid him a few bucks to wear my helmet without telling him there was an assassin looking for me?
Yeah.
He's a fair man. I've met the captain of that ship too, Pollard. Both good men. They'll give your father a fair shake. They might tell them to leave, but they won't be harsh about it. Hell, once they know the colony doesn't pose a threat, they may choose to ignore it. How long ago did they make contact?
A day or two.
Well, they won't get there anytime soon. It takes a long time to travel to Little Man. The nearest broadcast disc is several days away.
Freeman and I spoke for a few more minutes, then he signed off. I leaned back in my chair to watch more of the summit.
The GC fleet's movements show an increasing amount of sophistication. In the radar reading from Central Norma, they appear to have been testing their ability to broadcast. That was the first reading that we took. The ships broadcasted in, they remained perfectly still for 8 minutes, and they left. From what we can tell, they remained just long enough to generate the power they needed to broadcast out.
8 minutes between broadcasts? That hardly seems possible.
Bryce, did you say something?
The broadcast generators on their ship should take 15 minutes to build up enough energy for a broadcast.
You will recall the intercepted message, alterations complete. We believe that they have updated their equipment.
What's the problem, Admiral Kleiber? How long does it take the generators on the Doctrinaire to power up for a broadcast?
The Doctrinaire?
Admiral Kleiber has been developing a self-broadcasting fighter carrier. Haven't heard of it, Alex? Well, don't feel bad. It's Kleiber's little secret. He's been building it with funding from his pals on the Linear Committee.
Is that true?
Of course it's true. This is Bryce Kleiber. He has a long record of calling on friends in high places to skirt regulations. This is the same officer who made the Liberator clones, one of which is in this very facility.
I'm prepared to discuss the Doctrinaire. And after that, perhaps we should discuss your furtive cloning projects.
Shea Huang turns stark white, but only for a moment, and then he turns blood red. He slams his fist on the table.
May I take the floor?
Kleiber has clearly come to this meeting planning to discuss his top-secret project. He takes a data chip from a case by his seat and places it into a slot in the display board. A schematic of the Doctrinaire appears.
Gentlemen, let me begin by apologizing for not informing you about this project sooner. You should know that the project was not even discussed within the Senate. National security, the way it is at this time, the members of the Linear Committee specifically requested that I wait until a moment like this to discuss the project. As this project was paid for using the Linear Committee's discretionary funds rather than the military budget, it seemed like a fair request.
Freeman had selected a convertible and was waiting for me outside the Honolulu airport. Most people drove those cars so they could enjoy the warm island weather. However, sun worship had nothing to do with Freeman's decision. He simply did not fit in most cars. Have you ever been to this island before?
Nope. Where are we going?
There's a place called Sad Sam's Palace.
The boxing arena you told me about?
Boxing, wrestling, professional fighters, amateur challenge. It all depends what night you go. The place is near Waikiki. Freeman and I drove along the outskirts of Honolulu. He sat in his seat, cramped behind the wheel, watching the road and quietly scanning every turn and approaching vehicle.
I came in clean.
To avoid drawing attention to himself on Earth, he took public transportation in from Mars. With a war brewing and security at an all-time high, he didn't even bother trying to smuggle a gun in.
Any idea where I can find something?
No. Colorful shirts? Yes. Alcohol? Yes. I know where they sell a fruit drink that will knock you flat.
Where do you get the shirts?
The International Marketplace. It's a bazaar for tourists. You want bathing suits, hats made with coconut leaves, candles, or Hawaiian shirts? That's the spot. Guns? I didn't see any.
Clean, wholesome place?
Not exactly. It was a wide open lot with trees and carts and buildings with walls made of faux lava rock. The time was just 1700 hours on what looked like a slow day. We passed jewelry, candles, and clothes shops, and Freeman ignored them. Hucksters came to show us shirts and luggage. Freeman pushed past them without looking back. Then we passed a stand selling perfume, and Freeman stopped. Beside the stand was a warty little man in shorts and a golf cap. The man had no shirt. His body was skinny but muscled. His stomach muscles showed distinctly, and his chest was flat and carved with sinew.
Wait here.
Freeman went to the man, and they spoke very quietly.
Get specked! What kind of a store do you think this is? Who do you think you are?
Freeman dug into his pocket and rolled out some dollars. The warty man shook his head. Freeman laid out more. The man shook his head. Freeman peeled off two more bills. When Freeman went to retrieve his cash, the little man placed his hand over it. Putting the money in the front pocket of his shorts, the warty little man trotted into a service corridor. He returned a few minutes later with a colorful red shirt folded into a neat square. The shirt did indeed look large enough for Freeman to wear. Without saying a word, Freeman took the shirt and left. When we got back to the car, Freeman unfolded the shirt. Inside it, he found a pistol and three clips filled with bullets.
How did you know he'd have guns?
Who would buy perfume from an asshole like that?